Bouncing Death Kirk is a weekly Keyforge podcast focused on competitive play. The podcast is hosted by Kata Mode and Codameron. The show is here for listeners to gain a better understanding of how to evaluate decks, how to evaluate their own board position, and how to anticipate opponents' decisions. Without further ado, here's this week's episode.
Welcome to another episode of Bouncing Death Kirk. I am Kata Mode, and today I'm here on my own. Doing a solo episode because this is a topic that me and Codameron don't 100% see eye to eye on, but we agree enough that we can put it on the show. So the topic of this episode is learning how to become a better card player. The purpose of this episode is that there's a lot of players, like when I meet players in Keyforge, I'd say the vast majority of them, like 80 to 90%, their card game knowledge is very limited. Because if I ask them, hey, how many games have you legitimately played, right? Like not just played once or twice, but like actually took seriously before Keyforge. The answer is like zero or one. And the one is oftentimes like something like Magic. So you don't really have the big overarching understanding of how card games work. More often than not, what I see, not just in Keyforge, but I see in a lot of other games, is that generally players can understand how to play a meta, but they don't quite understand how to play the game. And what this leads to is players that are at one point in time good, and then the moment that the game changes, like their games just completely fall apart because a lot of the ideas that they had were concentrated to one particular point in time, and they don't have the knowledge base to adapt to new realities as they come. So in this episode, I think that the goal is to really enable you to just become a better card player overall. And when this game does inevitably change, you're going to be able to adapt with that change. So here's my three basic pillars of getting better at card games. Pillar number one, you got to improve your atmosphere. Pillar number two, you have to improve your knowledge base. And then pillar number three, you have to improve your approach to the game. So let's run through these. Pillar number one, you have to improve your environment. So when it comes to improving your environment, there's positive ways, positive things you can do, and there's negative things you can do, i.e. like remove the negative things. So the positive things you can do is you can surround yourself with players that will improve you as a player. So in general, the types of players you want to surround yourself with, on the one hand, just anyone that's better than you. So being able to, you know, observe someone that's better than you at anything is going to make you better at that thing, because you're going to notice things that they're doing that you're not doing, and you're going to passively adopt a lot of their habits. And this is true in a lot of fields, and it's true in playing games too. And this will matter in Keyforge as well. If you are at a certain level of Keyforge and you want to get to a better level of Keyforge, if you have access to just be around someone that's better than you at the game, you will get better by just observing them. The other thing you can do is you can put yourself around creative players. So there's certain types of people that are always thinking outside the box. And when you're thinking outside of the box, that will spread more ideas, and the more ideas you spread, the more that your brain's thinking in different directions, and that'll lead to you, yourself, having more ideas. As for negative things, you want to get away from certain types of players. You definitely want to get away from close-minded players, as they tend to be the most toxic players. And then the player that I think is the most dangerous to be around is the bad player who thinks they're a good player. Because these are the types of players that exude a lot of confidence, and you may adopt a lot of their opinions on the game. And what's going to happen is it might take you a while to learn that they're actually bad at the game, but by the time that you've learned that they're bad at the game, you've already adopted a lot of their opinions. And now you have to like work yourself out of those opinions because you already adopted them too early. So there's a couple immediate objections to this. Objection number one is, what if I don't have good players around me? And then objection number two is, what if I can't figure out if someone's bad? So let's run through these one by one. The first one is, what if I don't have good players around me? This happens, right? Sometimes your area just doesn't have any good players, or in some cases, your area may have zero players. I know this happened to me with a couple games where I just locally don't have any options. The move here is you got to take advantage of the online community. You know, we're not in 1995 anymore. Like, the internet exists, and if you want to find good players, you can find them. I mean, like, so myself and Kodamron, we have only been in the same physical location, I'd say 3, maybe 4 times ever. It is very rare for us to be in the same place at the same time. But we've been pretty good friends for quite some time. And we live in different states. And the way we met is we both played Star Wars. And we both thought about the game, or at least our approach to the game was very similar, even though we had a lot of differing opinions. And we liked talking to each other on the differences that we had. And that's really where the friendship started. And in KeyForge, we have a lot of split opinions as well. But we appreciate how we come about the game. And you can find that too, right? You can find friends online as well that think in the way you want to be thinking, that you feel help you grow as a player. And it takes some work, right? Like, I didn't meet Kodamron on day one. I wouldn't say that, like, most of the people that I've met online, you don't meet them on the first try. But if you're willing to branch out, you can find it. I mean, so we have our own Discord channel. You can find some people there. I know Decks of KeyForge has their own Discord. There's the general KeyForge Discord. There's also Reddit. There's different Facebook groups. And what you can do is you can just dabble in a bunch of different online spaces and then eventually find someone you might like. Also, another thing that you could do is you can enter online tournaments. So, you know, to use myself and Kodamron as an example, the way that we interacted with each other was there was an online tournament, and I won the online tournament, and then my deck was a little weird, so then Kodamron shot me a message, and he's like, hey, your deck looks really cool. Would you mind talking to me about why you made the deck the way you made it? And then that turned into a giant back and forth, and then eventually, you know, we just started chatting all the time, and then boom, you're friends. Like, that's how it happens. So it could just be that you play in, like, one of Decks of KeyForge's weekly tournaments. You run into a player that is either playing a weird deck or is playing in a way that seems foreign to you but is effective. And then maybe you say, hey, this person here seems to be doing something that I like. Let me shoot this person a message. And then we just start talking. So that's just another option that you have. Like, there's always people online that have information to share. And if you are open to absorbing that information, you can make yourself a better player that way. Now, as for the second objection, which is, all right, how do I tell if someone's bad? Especially if I'm new to the game. Like, if I'm not an experienced player, like, either in a particular game like KeyForge, or I'm not an experienced card player, and I can't sniff out when someone's bad, how do I prevent myself from absorbing a lot of bad opinions? And so what I would say to this is that bad players expose themselves eventually. What you'll notice with bad players that think they're good is that they will probably win at your local level. And they'll win at your local level either because they have better decks or the other players aren't trying hard. I know this happened a lot in HeroClix, where people that win on a weekly basis is just generally whoever is willing to play the cheese, and most people just play fun teams all the time. So, like, there's a person that'll win all the time, but they're actually bad. So it could just be that, or it could also be that, what's it called? They get lucky. You just never know. But what ends up happening is, over time, they're going to be in situations where they're up against legitimate players playing legitimate decks. And when that happens, they just have a way of either losing to quote-unquote bad luck, or they end up just not making it, right? It's like, oh, there's a big tournament. Guess what? My mom, she had her birthday. You know what? Guy from out of town just showed up. Have to go to that. Meanwhile, this is a person that plays multiple times a week, but then any time that there's a big tournament, all of a sudden they're nowhere to be found, or just like, they're just like, you'll notice that there's too many coincidences. You're like, okay, there's been 6 big tournaments in the past 6 months, and you've just somehow managed to not top cut any of them. That happens. So There are ways to spot that, but you might say, hey, look, I don't have 6 months to figure this out. So what I would say is that when you run into someone at your local level, just take everything they say with a grain of salt, right? Like, don't just assume that whoever you instinctually think is the best player is actually the best player. Like, wait it out. Let's see how their performance goes over the course of months. Like, take a little piece here, a little piece there, right? Like, listen to everyone, but don't, like, completely become a zealot for anyone. And over time, you'll start to see who's legitimate and who's not legitimate. And the people that are legit, those are the ones that you actually start absorbing harder. And the ones that you notice are kind of pretenders, or you're like, okay, you know what? You say stuff, but I'm going to take only pieces here and there. And large parts of it I'm not going to adopt because I don't want to end up in a situation where I have to reevaluate everything that I know about a game because you gave me too much bad advice early on. So that's improving your environment. Now, one last tip on improving your environment. If you want to figure out who's good at a game and you don't really know where to start, so what I would say is at any event, like at a local level, there's always one person who is playing a terrible deck. There's always someone who's like, okay, this is someone that's playing a deck that everyone acknowledges is not good and should go either 1-3 or 0-4, maybe if they're lucky, 2-2. But yet this person goes 3-1. And if this person just happens to do that like multiple times, like they just consistently play terrible decks, but then either go 500 or go 3-1 like every single week like clockwork, that is a pretty good indicator that they're actually really good and they're just messing around, because that's a thing that a lot of good players do. Like, a lot of good card players just don't take week-to-week tournaments very seriously. So you want to put yourself around those players and really listen to what they have to say. So if you see someone at your local event playing something wacky, but doing well at the same time, like clearly playing above the level of their deck, that's someone that you should keep your eye on and say, okay, maybe it's not luck. Like, maybe this person's actually pulling off something pretty interesting because they're actually a good player. So let's move on to pillar number two. So pillar number two of being a good player is you want to improve your knowledge base. So again, a lot of players, KeyForge is going to be either their first or their second game. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with KeyForge being an early game, but if you want to get better, it helps to have other game knowledge. So I wouldn't say that you need to necessarily play every single other game on the planet competitively, but it does help to play a bunch of games. So the easiest way to do this without breaking the bank is in pretty much every single major city, there should be at least one game store. And the game store I'm referring to is a game store that has a lot of board games. There should be, there's like, I know Seattle has this, Vegas had this, Minnesota or Minneapolis where I live now has this. There should be one store where there's tables and there's a card section and you just look and it's like, okay, Ascension's here, DC Deck Builder's here, the Ashes core set's here, L5R core set's here, the Star Wars core set's here. We also have some random Magic cards. There's some Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Maybe they maybe got some Pokemon singles. And then they also might have board games such as like Clank or something. So find a store that has that and just go in with like a friend or two and then pick a game, any game that has cards, preferably with a board, I would say. And then just play the game. Like play one of those games, just do it once a week and just say, okay, we're going to play Ashes for 1 month straight. And we're going to try to take this, you know, not like super seriously, but seriously enough where we're like trying to win. We're going to play Ascension and we're going to try to win. We're going to play Seasons and we're going to try to win. We're going to play some Exceed and try to win. We're going to play Millennium Blade. Well, Millennium Blades, maybe not, because someone has to actually buy that one. But you get my drift, right? Like, you want to actually just set time aside where you and your friends can just go play these games. A really good way to make sure people take it seriously is just put $1 in the game. Like, just say, okay, when we're playing this game, everyone put $1 on the table. Whoever wins gets the money. Because even though there's only $4 on the table, people become really cutthroat really fast when there's even a buck on the line. So if you want to make sure that you get better, Like, make sure that your friends are actually trying to kill you in these games. Make sure that when your friends are drafting their seasons decks, that they are not messing around. And when, they're playing DC deck builder, that they are hate drafting. Like, you want them to be as ruthless as possible against you, so that way you can struggle more. Because the more you struggle in a game, the more likely it is that you will improve in the game. And so if you do this, if you just say, I'm gonna pick one game and we're gonna just play this one game, a couple times in that, if you just go to like your card shop and you pick a game, you could probably get like 2 to 4 games in of that. If it's like a board game, do that for like a month, then pick a different game and do that, and just get your reps in with the game. Because what will happen over time is that as you get more repetitions in with different games, the elements of different game designs will start to permeate into what you see in Keyforge and into what you see in other games. Like, you'll start to notice that the same mechanics show up over and over and over again in games. And what'll end up happening is you'll learn how to play the card game as opposed to the meta game. Because this is the reality of most people that play any card game, is that the vast majority of players, they know how to play the meta. They don't know how to play the card game. And what I mean by this is anyone can learn a meta game. You could drop me into a card game I've never seen before, and you can say, okay, here are the five top decks, here's how they interact with each other, here's what the tournament standings are. Like, you can show me all that data, and I can pretty quickly learn how to play the decks themselves. And then you could show me a card, either a card that's in the card pool or a card that is new, and I could pretty quickly be able to tell you whether that card helps any of the decks that are viable, or it hurts any of the decks that are viable, or if it is unplayable in the meta, right? That is not a hard thing to do. What is hard to do is to understand what the game wants you to do, to understand what the game is doing at a mechanical level. Because most of the meta decks in any card game, what they are is there's the base level of the game. Like, there's the way that the game's supposed to be played if all the cards are vanilla. And then cards get added with text, cards get different stat lines, and what ends up happening is there ends up being imbalances. There's things in the cards that do things that really shouldn't be allowed to be done, right? There's things that you say, oh, the game is meant to only have X amount of direct damage possible, but there's X plus 5 amount of direct damage possible. Or the game's supposed to only allow you to get one mana per turn, but now there's a card that lets you get 1.5 mana per turn. Or the game's only supposed to let you draw 20 cards over the course of the game, but then there's these cards that enable you to draw 30 cards over the course of the game. And so that's typically how the metas form, but like, that's hard to see for a lot of people. It's hard because if you don't understand how the game works at a baseline level, you're not going to understand how these metas form, and more importantly, you're not going to be able to see the future. So a lot of times what happens is, like, there's a lot of people that get thought of as sort of like the big creative people in card games. And I wouldn't say that they're creative, more so as they have a deeper understanding of the game. So the sort of quote unquote creative types, they can just see how the game operates at a base level. So you can show them a card, and much like the player that's playing the meta, they can see if it helps the current decks in the meta, or it hurts the current decks in the meta, or is unable to be played in the current meta. But what they can also see is they can see deck types that should exist in the game that don't exist because it doesn't have the proper support. And they can see that that's a card that is supportive to a certain type of deck that doesn't exist yet. And that's how they're able to spot certain types of decks. Like, you see this like every single, like, you don't see this as much in Keyforge because you can't build your own decks. But you see this in every other card game where there's a new expansion and people think that the cards are whatever. And then the first tournament with that new expansion, there's like one or two completely new decks that like seemingly nobody saw coming. And it's because they weren't in the meta and people couldn't see that this is a deck that's been lying underneath the surface, but it just hasn't had the right cards show up. And now that the cards show up, the people that could see what's actually going on, they are ahead of the curve. And so this could be you. Like, you can have the ability to see what's going on underneath the surface for not just Keyforge, but any card game you ever choose to play. And the way you do that is by just playing as many games as possible. And again, really playing them. And you don't have to play these games, again, you don't have to play them like every single day forever. But a thing that really helped me as a card player is me and one of my buddies in Seattle, he loves board games. And so we would just do this thing where he would buy a board game, and then we would just go super duper hard on that board game for like 2 weeks. And what we would do is we would play it like, two, three, maybe even four times a week, and just really try to get to the point where we feel we've solved the game. And once we've solved the game, move to the next game. And that's just how we have fun. I don't think you need to do that, but the thing that I didn't realize I was doing at the time is that trying to crack the code on other games helps me in whatever game I'm currently playing. And a good example of this is in Star Wars, a card game, one of my bigger achievements is I was able to come up with an infinite combo, but that infinite combo had actually existed in the game 2 years prior to me actually discovering it. Like, the combo everyone knew existed, but nobody knew how to leverage it in a way that was actually competitive, and that's what I was able to do. But the question is, okay, well, how did I go from the cards exist in 2015 to being able to break it in 2017? And the answer to this is that in early 2017, I started playing Hearthstone. And I was playing Hearthstone more as like an in-between game, but what ended up happening was as I was playing Hearthstone, I tried to look more into the competitive decks of Hearthstone, and I was looking at some combo decks. And Hearthstone and Star Wars, the card game, have almost nothing in common as far as how they play, but there was a combo in Hearthstone that actually interacted in a very similar way to the combo in Star Wars, and I was able to see how I can mix those, and I was able to take the concept that I had that was there in Hearthstone, apply it to Star Wars, and then boom, I had the deck. But I wouldn't have ever really been able to come up with that insight in Star Wars by just playing the Star Wars cards. I mean, I had 2 years where like I was just playing this game and like looking for every single which way to try to make this combo work, and I just couldn't figure out how to make this thing effective. And it just took me going away from the table, playing something else, seeing something in another game, and then coming back. And this can happen for you in KeyForge. You can think you know what you know about KeyForge, then you can go and play some Pokemon. And then Pokemon and KeyForge are nothing like each other, but there might be some small insight you notice in Pokemon where you're like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize card advantage worked this way in this game versus KeyForge, and then you can apply that back to KeyForge. And there's other games that are like that too. I would say the easiest way to gain insight into a game like KeyForge, I would recommend deck builders. So I'd recommend try out Ascension, try out DC Deck Builder, try out Dominion, just because those use refill hand draws, much like KeyForge. But definitely want to try other stuff too. Like you just want to try as many different games that just use cards, so you can see different mechanics get cross-pollinated across different games and understand why card games break when they do, so you can come back to KeyForge and understand, all right, this is how I could potentially break this game. All right, so now on to pillar number three. So pillar number three is improving your approach. So a big problem in KeyForge, and we kind of go over this a little bit in our previous episode where we talk about testing efficiently, but you need to have a process over results mentality. Too often when people play card games, they're just too focused on beating the player in front of them. And so there's always two games to be played. There's the short game, which is beating your opponent, and then there's a long game. And the long game is improving your development. So this is something that happens a lot in sports, where oftentimes the things that help you win at one level are really detrimental to helping you win at another level. A perfect example of this is, let's say you're a tennis player. At every single level of tennis, the best thing you can do is just not play offense. So like if my goal is to become a championship level college tennis player, that or below. Like statistically, the best thing I should do is just volley, volley, volley. Like all I should do is if somebody hits the ball to me, I should just try to hit the ball and get it in the square. And as long as I do that, it just every time, like I just run to the ball, get safe hits, get it in the square, run to the ball, safe hit, get to the square. What's going to happen is my opponent's going to make enough mistakes over the course of the game that I'm going to win. And quite frankly, I also shouldn't even try to get spikes on serves. or sorry, aces. Like when I serve, I should just do soft serves into the box. Now, anyone that's watched tennis thinks would hear this and say, this is crazy. Like I've never seen Serena Williams do this. And the reason they don't do that is this style that I'm describing here of tennis is really bad if you have any intention of going beyond college. Like if you want to win the US Open, you're going to need to be able to ace your serves, and you're also going to need to be able to crack some balls. Like you have to play offense, but offense only matters at the highest level of tennis. It is very much more detrimental than beneficial at anything below that. But you would never teach someone to not play offense, right? Like if I were a tennis coach, I would be trying to teach every single student I had how to play offense, because if you just show them how to only play defense, that's really going to hurt them in their long-term development. Like if they have any chance of being a good player later, you have to do that. And you see this in other sports too, like in soccer. The best way to play at lower levels is just kickball. But at higher levels, you have to have footwork. And I don't want to run through a whole bunch of examples of how this works, but specifically in card games, it's really easy to make bad decisions work because you're up against bad players. And there's some examples that I can use for this, but the easiest one would be deception plays. So there's a lot of times in card games where a certain maneuver works because your opponent is not sharp, because they're not paying attention. And you do that on them, and it works really well on them because they're not good. But then the moment you're up against a good player, they're not going to fall for it. So if you base your entire strategy of playing being that you're just assuming everyone's going to be dumb around you, when you're up against players that aren't dumb, all of a sudden you're going to get beat. And that's where the process over results comes in. So when you do a move, you have to kind of ask yourself, like, okay, would a vault tour winner fall for this move? Or would this action that I have, would it work against someone that's really paying attention? And that's a hard thing to separate because, again, if you're focused entirely on beating the player in front of you, you can fall into a lot of these pit traps. You can find yourself justifying a lot of bad moves because they worked, right? You're basically the tennis player that's doing zero offense. And then when you go up against a good player, your whole game falls apart. So what I would say is when you're playing a game, every single game should be looked at as an opportunity to get better. So I know when I play, win or lose, my only thoughts really are, what could I have done differently? Yeah, you can think about your opponent and whether or not they got lucky. You can think about your own luck. But I always try to think, like, okay, if this card was really helping me in the game, what if I didn't draw it? How does this game look? Or if my opponent, what cards could they have had at any point in time in the game that could have really changed the outcome of this game, and how would I react? And just try to think of different worlds of that game, because if you do that, you don't then need to play a whole bunch of games to be in that situation again. Like you can have one game function at the same level of probably like five or six games if you're willing to run through five or six simulations in your head based on different inflection points of the game. And that takes practice, right? I'm not going to sit here and pretend that this is like an easy thing to learn. But the easiest way that I would say is just after you play any game, just think, okay, what card was really useful in my game that if I don't have it, forces me to change my play? And then on my opponent's side, at what point in the game could they have had like a too much to protect? Or could they have had a board wipe? Or could they have had like a really oppressive creature, like say an Ember Imp or a Shadow Self? When could they have had a card that really could have swung things in their direction? Because if you do that, it doesn't necessarily change the outcome of any given game. But what it does do is it gets you thinking about different ways things could play out. And so then the next time you're in that spot, you haven't just experienced that one position one time. You've experienced that position multiple times in your head, and you'll now have a better understanding of how you do it as long as you're willing to reflect on your own play. And think that the point of playing this game, like you're at your local Chainbound event, you're playing at your friend's house or whatever, the point of that game that you're playing isn't to beat the person in front of you. It's to try to learn something about the game. And that's the long game. That's how you learn over time, where you might make mistakes by doing this, by the way. You might try moves just to see how they play out, and it may cost you some games in the short term. But in the long term, it'll make you a better player because you have a bigger understanding of how to play the game. And that's where the approach comes in. You got to have the process over the results. If you focus too much on the results, you're going to find yourself making mistakes because you're going to be too focused on doing things that help you win right now, when you really need to be focused on doing the types of things that'll make you better over the course of time, which is how you end up winning big events. So to recap, three pillars. Pillar number one, you got to improve your environment. This means playing with the good players and players that are open-minded and trying to get rid of the bad influences. Pillar number two, you got to improve your breadth of knowledge. This means you got to play other card games. You like as many as you can play with as many weird mechanics. As long as they have cards, you need to be interested in them and you need to learn how to play them and play them multiple times to the point where you feel comfortable talking about the mechanics of that game. And lastly, you need to change your approach to the game. You need to have a process over results mentality, and having that process over results mentality will help you be able to grow more as a player in the long term as opposed to having short-term results. So yeah, that's this episode of Bouncing Death Quark. You can find us online. We are on Facebook or Twitter at Death Quark for either one of them. Through either of our social medias, you can find an invite to our Discord channel. The Discord channel is the easiest way to interact with myself or Codamron. And lastly, if you want to support Bouncing Death Quark even more, you can represent us. So we have merchandise. So you can buy t-shirts, sweaters, bags, hats. And when you go to your local tournament, you can have our logo there and show your support for the show that way, which helps spread the word. And so, yeah, tell your friends about it. Enjoy the show, and we'll see you next time.